Today on The Breakdown, you're in the money in the World Series of Poker main event. Not just the baby money, like the toddler money, you know, 30K, 40K, and all the big money. You can see it. Those mountains with their purple majesty, not that far away. But then here you are, you know, you're up against a relatively deep opponent, and you might just get caught in a web of deception and pain where people post Twitter clips of them groaning when you make the play that you ultimately decide to make. One of these two players, Toby Lewis and Daniel Van Pam, are going to get caught in that web of deception. They're going to get slowly eaten by the spiders of sadness and get pulled apart by the chicken saute of misery. Okay, let's do it on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey. The chicken saute of misery?
Saute, yeah.
Saute.
Saute. Chicken saute. It's an Indian dish.
Right. So what did that have to do with the... Like, usually that would tie into something you've been doing. You were talking about spiders.
Yeah. The spiders of sadness. Yeah.
And the chicken saute.
The chicken saute of misery. Well, spiders and chickens could be things.
They are things.
So, and then I just added a little twist to it. I made it not the chickens of misery, but the chicken saute of misery.
So what ties them together is that they are things.
They're animals. They're alive. I mean, spiders are insects, but you know what I'm saying. They could be coming and eating you if they get the chance, right?
Spiders not, and not chickens. Not the chicken once it's in saute form.
Right. But before that, the way we got to chicken saute was chickens. And obviously chickens will eat you. You cannot lay amongst chickens. They will eat you.
It's like piranhas. They're the piranhas of not the air because they don't typically fly.
Right. They're not known for flight.
Yeah. The piranhas of the land, but in like a coop.
Right. And not like panthers or lions, which
no.
Because they're too big and they're like singular. Like you need a lot. It takes a bunch of chickens. How many chickens would it take to
dismember Jonathan Levy?
Yeah.
61.
61, how long would it take them to do so? I'm just laying there with my arms out, not fighting it.
15 minutes or so?
Yeah, and they would just start right off, too. They wouldn't need to be coaxed. You wouldn't have to put, like, feet on me. They'd just be like, hey, look what we got here.
Yeah.
It's the biggest piece of chicken feet in the world.
It's Jonathan Levy.
We must dismember! Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So chicken saute of sadness. That's a classic line that's going to live on. That's all I'll say about that.
I'm going to take the other side of that.
Really?
Yeah.
You shouldn't have done that. Because Chris Jones will now make it his life's mission to make sure that chicken saute of sadness is said.
I don't think he will. I think he's
long
more,
after you are forgotten.
Despite the fact that it seems that I am more on the anti-Minnesota train than you, just based on recent stuff. Don't let your recency bias hurt you, Minnesotan folk.
Nice.
Remember that Jonathan is truly the bad one.
What have I done to anyone is my question. Bad.
Oh, you've never done anything.
Thank you.
You've been something that people don't like.
But what about you? You're more unlikable.
I'm a beacon.
Of dismemberment.
Is that just the word of the day?
Yes, I don't know. I didn't know where to go. So
and sadness? You're going with sadness again?
Yeah, beacon of dismemberment and sadness. And satay, chicken satays. Those are pretty good.
Did you go to reverse college? We haven't met for a week and a half. What happened?
Well, I've had a lot going on.
Okay.
I spent the last three and a half days with a 14-year-old who's my nephew. And it was just me and him. He came up to hang out. And I've never done that before, and I had a lot. I felt a lot of responsibility to like have him be entertained and enjoy himself for three full days, and that ain't easy when you got a 14-year-old, you know. And he doesn't want to like watch TV or go to the movies or, you know, do stuff that's easy to do with that kind of kid. You know, he wants to like. I mean, we had a good time. Don't get me wrong, but it was like I was thinking about it a lot. You know, I'm like, okay, now what? Now what?
He just wants to sit around and read Dianetics with you.
He wants to talk about the Bible.
Dianetics, yeah. I said that.
Yeah, I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously.
Hey, this hand was suggested by a lot of people.
Oh,
I
was it?
We're gonna mess around a bit more, but I wanted to just talk about the people who suggested it because there's three new suggesters.
Whoa, I'd like to talk about the people who suggested it as well. But all right. Not in friendly ways.
Okay, good. Because one of them's from Minnesota. It's Wesley Cannon.
Okay, he's a hack.
So you like Minnesota? Or
I never said I like Minnesota. I said Minnesota likes me. And they like, and Wesley likes that I call them a hack. Because Wesley knows deep down that he's a hack.
Have you met Wesley Cannon?
I could pick him out of a police lineup.
I have met Wesley Cannon.
Oh, well, that's incredible. Oh, I met Hitler, but that doesn't make him best friends with me.
I shook hands with Wesley Cannon.
Oh, my gosh. Donald Trump shook hands with everyone in America. And they all love him. That's why he's president right now.
I bridged the gap between Oregon and Minnesota.
I
did the good work. Right. So Wesley Cannon and SciFighter, those are the two veteran suggesters who suggested this hand.
Okay, so we talked a little about Wesley Cannon. Let's talk a little bit about SciFighter. And there's one thing that really comes out, really stands out, and you know what it is.
That you always mispronounce how the name is supposed to be. And you always say SciFighter or something?
No, I say SciFighter. I feel like it's SciFighter. And you're always like, it's SciFighter. And you're always a little loud and a little intense when you say
It's just because with things like this, when it's so... repeated. It happens so many times. It's just, it's amazing to me that you can't remember.
I don't care to try, I think is what it is.
But it doesn't feel like you should have to try.
Yeah.
It feels like it should just happen.
I see SIF and I'm like, SIF. I just see SIF.
I guess this happened with the country, not country, the city.
Oh, what happened?
Let's see how you pronounce it. You're correct. It's Prague.
I've actually gotten really good at that one.
Yeah, but it took you a long time.
You made fun of me for so long that I, like, every time before I said I think about it.
You're welcome. Now you don't sound like an idiot every time you talk about it.
But SciFighter, SciFighter, the only people who are going to know I'm mispronouncing it are you and that person. And that
right, but it. I'm just saying it's the same concept.
Of course it is.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, for sure it is.
All right, new suggestors.
Good, let's get into them.
One is Don H. So just like going with the normal name. Cool. Welcome, Don.
Nice. Don, we know that's not your real name. It's Don B. And we know it.
Okay. There's Optimus Klang. So what could that mean?
Well, we know part of it.
Optimus Prime, sure. But what's the Klang part with a K?
It's like Kang the Conqueror.
There's an L. Klang.
Yeah, I understand.
So why is there an L added?
Oh, yeah. Why is there anything added, Grant?
So you're just adding random letters?
I mean, I did Chicken Satay of Sadness. I'm the guy who would add an L because it's sort of funny. You're like, I'm not going to say Optimus Kang. That's too... plain and normal, I call it Optimus Klang. And now, the world's my oyster, you know? I get to go into 3-star Michelin restaurants, and they're like, there's no bill for you tonight, sir. It's on the house.
Somebody watched The Bear too recently. Anyway.
I mean, well, I watched it when it came out. I just still remember it.
Yeah, it's a good show.
It's my favorite episode.
That's a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you definitely nailed it with why it's Optimus Klang. We don't need to
explore well,
it.
Why is it then, Mr. I did go to reverse college?
I don't know. Maybe his name is Klang. Anyway.
That is ridiculous. K-L-A-N-G.
Wow. Do you know how much of an asshole you sound like if it is?
Not at all. I sound like a smart person, even if it is his last name or her last name.
And the last suggester. Yes.
Okay.
Spirit Airlines with a Z.
With a Z. That's someone who hates Spirit Airlines, obviously.
Who doesn't hate Spirit
Airlines?
Exactly.
That's why I said it, because it's an impossible... It's like saying that's someone who breathes. They love to breathe.
Yeah.
They breathe sometimes.
I mean, I don't actually personally hate Spirit Airlines, because I've never taken Spirit Airlines, because so many people hate it.
Yeah, no, I've taken Spirit Airlines, and I think I've taken it twice in my life, and both times I... vowed to never take it again, no matter what.
So why'd you take it the second time?
It was years later, and I thought maybe I could do better this time. I like understood it better and understood the system, and then at the end, I was like, nope. It is such a frustrating thing. Even if you save money, it feels like they are nickel and diming you in every which way. It feels like you've been tricked.
Yeah.
Even if you save money, it feels like you've been tricked. Maybe if you do them enough, it doesn't feel like that. But man, I don't like it. I don't like it. Reverse college. Let's go.
It's a new concept.
The fighting warthogs.
Right.
That was our academic team.
Yeah.
We fought warhogs.
Your non-academic team.
No, we had to fight warhogs.
Yeah.
We were up against the fighting warhogs, and we did our best.
And you survived.
That's what we did in reverse college.
Yeah.
And I did survive.
With
and you know who didn't?
All of your compatriots.
And some of the warhogs. Some of them also survived.
Yeah, because they won ultimately.
I call it more of a draw.
Yeah, you would.
A stalemate.
You're like, oh yeah, it was a mutual breakup. Yeah.
Technically, surrender was asked for and granted.
Did you like that tie at the World Cup final last year when they tied? It was a draw.
I mean, they probably then did penalty kicks, right?
Yeah.
PKs.
There's no draws, baby. Not in Warthog War.
Fighting Warthogs, man.
Should we just get into the hand?
Yep.
All right. It's the main event.
Good.
It's Toby Lewis.
Yes. Sounds like the name of a comedian. Sort of looks like he could be a comedian. Turns out he's not a comedian. I looked it up.
I don't see comedian. Maybe it's his expression, but he looks very serious. He's a very serious type of dude.
That's a comedian thing. Think about Adam Sandler.
Oh, yeah. Always serious.
He looks serious, and the words are funny, and it's the juxtaposition that makes your heart go with Twitter. But anyway, so Toby Lewis, let's play quickly the Hendon Mob game. What is Toby Lewis's Hendon Mob, Grant?
He's not like a high roller, but he's a very accomplished player.
Correct.
11 million?
8.2. Not bad. Not bad. And, you know, since we're here, Daniel Van Pam.
I have no idea.
Yeah, you would. There's no reason to know this.
72K.
$191,000. Okay. So, fine. Okay. So, yeah. Tell us about the hand.
The star of the show is in the hand, Nicholas Rigby.
Oh, yeah.
The star of the main event so far, despite having busted at the time that we are recording.
He just busted last night, yeah.
Yeah, at the time of this recording. But, you know, he was the most featured player for sure. He was on the feature table almost maybe every day.
He's a very entertaining player to watch. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, and it makes sense because the World Series is desperate for players who have some thought behind what they're doing and are very active and aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, that's entertaining.
He is at least very active and aggressive and sometimes has thought behind.
Sometimes has thought. That's what I would say. We can talk a little bit about Rigby because I don't think we'll end up doing any of his hands.
Yeah, probably not.
Right, because
they're not good enough.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Rigby. That's how we can mess around because he's going to be a garbage human in this hand.
Sure.
A semi-garbage human, I suppose.
Yeah, he's not a garbage human at all in this hand, actually.
Yeah, you're right. He's a semi-garbage.
He's not. He's not.
He's a recycle human. Maybe compost.
I think you're being unfair to Nicholas Rigby.
Can he be compost?
You cannot be compost. You can be...
Actually, of all of the things that you can be, you can definitely be compost.
You can be renewed.
Okay, renewed Nicholas Rigby.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. So he, for those who don't know and haven't been watching the coverage, he made a deep run 2 years ago in the main event. He got something like 50th. He was known well for playing deuce three every time he got it, and he called it the dirty diaper.
Yes.
And his play style has not changed. He's still,
at all.
I saw him three bet deuce three plus one against the under the gun opener, who was a tight, French woman. She's still on, I think, at the time that we're recording this. She had jacks and she won the hand.
Yeah.
That's the only time I saw him with deuce three. But Rigby, we talked about this before the podcast, just cause he's an interesting figure. He does something well. He definitely does something well by being a super lag who puts a lot of pressure on people and makes it difficult to play against, especially in the type of tournament where people really care about their tournament life, which the main event is the ultimate version of that, right?
It's for sure.
The tournament that people care the most about their tournament life in the world.
Really to their detriment most of the time.
Yes. So his style is probably most effective in the main event, I would say.
Those are his two best caches ever.
Right.
These two main event caches.
So he plays a lot of hands that are not GTO approved from different positions.
Oh my God. Yes.
And he when deep and when other players are deep, makes life very difficult.
Right. I mean, you basically have to, I think mostly you're doing like a lot of check calling to him, letting him blast off, calling down with reasonable hands to call down with, call wider than you would.
Yeah.
You know, have to make more river calls than you would against normal players. And hope he doesn't cooler you, or you know, hope he doesn't have you, because when he has you, you're just gonna pay him off like most of the time.
And that's what happened to Phil Hellmuth, right? Phil, I mean, that was I didn't actually watch that hand, but it was two pair over two pair. It was a spot
they both
where
flop two pair, yeah.
Where maybe Hellmuth doesn't go broke against most players.
I think he doesn't actually, because it was ace 10-9 and Hellmuth had 10-9 suited. I think he absolutely does not go. I mean, there were two like spades on the board too, but I still think he doesn't go broke against most players. I think he just makes the tight fold and is careful. But against Rigby, I don't see how you could do that.
Right.
That would be absurd.
So that's one of the benefits of Rigby's strategy.
Yes.
But when you get down into the granular stuff of like what you're supposed to do with certain hands at shallow depths in tournaments, it seems that Rigby has some big holes based on
massive.
A couple of examples that I'm going to give right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the 10-7 hand. You open 10-7 off to 2.5 blinds. The small blind shoved for
15?
I think 15 blinds, and he called with 10-7 off.
Yeah, I mean, that's
which is
wild.
Just... it's just categorically bad. It can't be defended.
And it's, and he didn't even have like 700 blinds in front of me. Even then, by the way, it would still be a bad call, but at least you could make, like, that's the Dan Harrington thing.
Right, right. If you have
more than, less than this 10% of your stack, you know, like, it was just an absurd call.
Right. And then he got short, and he had 12 blinds, and on the button, he shoved 10-3 off.
Yes.
Which, when it was unopened, which, you know, it's going to get through a fair amount, but you're supposed to just not do that.
That's horrible.
Yeah. So there's some fundamental issues in his game for tournament play that are pretty clear, but he does something very well in these types of fields as well,
mm-hmm.
which is why he's featured and why he's interesting and why he's fun to watch.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure. He notably did this thing where when he busted Chance Cornith, where he opened the button, Chance 3-bet from the big blind with Ace King of Hearts, and Rigby just shoved 102 blinds effective, 4-bet shoved from the button, which kind of no one does
right.
with aces anyway, which is what Rigby had. So Chance called with the Ace King of Hearts, which I think is completely reasonable and right, and was gone. And that was that. I think he was just drawing dead on the turn, and that was that.
I mean, that's really like the image really working for you there.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think part of it also is that Chance had the kind of hand where when someone 4-bet shoves that much, they kind of never have aces or kings ever.
You wouldn't expect right that.
Yeah. Plus you have the Rigby might have ace nine here or some weird hand and just be losing his mind. I don't know if Rigby's actually can have that, by the way.
He doesn't
for
really,
102 blinds.
He didn't really do a lot of pre-flop stuff. He was more of like a play too many hands and then get really aggressive post-flop guy.
I would guess Cornith thought he was flipping or chopping a lot when he was calling there, you know, but had already put in the 3-bet and was like, I mean, maybe once, does this guy ever have ace queen? I don't know. Maybe he's a little weird and a little wild. Maybe. I don't know. By the way, Rigby also famously called off a 4-bet shove 2 years ago with deuce 3 off against Ace King.
Oh, wow.
Like with like, you know, 8-9 tables left or something like that. You know?
For the memes.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it's for. But, you know, the dirty diaper made its way into the poker lexicon and remains there and probably will. I think that's just the name now.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, despite not having a ton of tournament success except for these main event runs, he's now like among the more famous tournament poker players because of these two runs where he plays interesting and has a hand named after his thing.
For a guy with $250,000 in live earnings and nothing else to speak of, like they say he's a Pittsburgh cash game legend, but as we were talking before the show, it seems like that's code for he's awful at the cash games, and so they all love him and talk him up. Like, not he's a crusher at cash games.
I don't know.
That's what it seems like.
Who knows? I mean, his style might work well on cash. If he's playing high enough stakes, I could see the style working in, like, not the highest stakes where he's playing against really good players, but like in 5-10 where people are a little deeper than they want to be type of thing, I could see it really being effective.
He's cashed in his life in 6 tournaments, and there's only 2 that have a buy-in more than $1,500, and those are the 2 main events. And only 2 have a buy-in more than $300 or $800.
Well, that's super cool.
I'm just saying, like, if he was a true cash game crusher and he was playing tournaments effectively for real, he'd probably have a much better. He'd be playing bigger stuff more of the time.
I mean, if he just never plays tournaments, maybe.
Right. It just seems. But we saw him move in with 10-3 off.
And
call with 10-7. So it seems like it can't be real.
I mean,
his bio says he's a dealer from South Carolina. How is he a cash game legend? Is Daniel Grinder also a dealer as well as being Daniel Grinder? Of course he isn't.
Okay. You're being a little harsh.
But what part do you actually disagree with?
I disagree that the small stack tournament mistakes mean he's not good at cash games.
Oh.
Which you correlated.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Because that has nothing to do with cash games.
Fine. Okay, that's a fair thing. How about the other stuff, all the other bigger things that I was saying? Do you disagree with those things too?
No,
okay.
Not really.
So maybe when you're saying I'm being really harsh on him,
I just
mostly
think
you agree with all that stuff.
I just think you are taking issue with how the World Series of Poker classified him and not necessarily
right.
how he classifies himself.
Oh,
and
for sure.
And it comes off not great is what I'm trying to help
you're
you right
to be
now.
Helpful. Okay.
Yeah.
No, you're right. He's not classifying himself that way. Yeah. That's the WSOP. That's true. No, actually, I love watching him play, and I want him in these tournaments where he's putting massive pressure on people. And I'm even inspired to try and ape some of that style, not fully because it's too much. But I think
it'd be more fun to play more hands.
It'd be so much more fun, and I think there's something to be said for doing it in the right spots, you know, against the right tournaments. I think that'll really work,
right?
And so, I want to do that more instead of just playing well, quote well unquote, you know, as best I can, you know.
Yeah, I think you could play more hands and still be playing well,
right? Of course, but there's a level of psychosis, I think, that some of these players have, which aids them in these spots. You know, they're willing to pull the trigger in spots where I just wouldn't be because I know all these other things that give me reason not to do it. And they just like pull the trigger there. And I think it works for a lot of them a lot of the time. So I don't know. It's hard to know. Like, I don't even know how good Chino Rehm is. Like, Chino has a lot of successes, but he's been in makeup forever. Does that mean he's good or does that mean he's not good?
I think he has a gambling issue outside of poker is why. I think he's actually quite good at poker.
You're probably right.
Yeah. That's my impression of the Chino Rehm situation.
Okay. Fair enough.
I would not want to play against Chino Rehm in poker.
It's, oh my gosh. Like, it sounds like one of the hardest things to do.
Comparing Chino Rehm and Rigby, like I would not be happy to have Rigby on my left in a tournament ever, but it wouldn't be like the disaster of all disasters.
I wouldn't be that worried about having Rigby on my left. I mean, in a really important tournament, that would be like, okay.
I mean, it's
going to suck, but there's going to be opportunities here to do really well. Chino, I feel like, is going to be harder and less opportunities to do really
well. And also, Chino's like thinking better than me, right?
Right,
most
exactly.
Most likely about the poker.
Right. Like, I assume I understand more about poker than Rigby, I assume, but I wouldn't assume that about Chino.
Right.
Chino, whether that's true or not, that would be my
unclear
guess.
Yeah. Anyway, Rigby's still in at this hand.
Yes, he is. He's a part of it. And I was rooting for the guy, I got to tell you. Even though it may sound like I'm being harsh, I was totally rooting for him.
Yeah, you were harsh. You hurt my feelings.
I didn't mean to be harsh. I'm not
even a big Rigby guy.
I just feel like when they say Pittsburgh cash game legend,
see, but
doing
you focus thing. You focus in on something and then it sounds like you're criticizing the player.
I said they.
Yeah, so I know, but I'm talking about what happened overall.
Okay, but I'm talking from now, right now. I'm saying ESPN is doing a thing. They're like presenting him in a particular light, which then it doesn't smell right. You know what I mean? Like, because we watch him play and we look at his results, and then it's like, what's going on here? And it makes me want to put on my detective magnifying glass.
I understand.
That's all. But that's not. You're right. That's not Rigby's fault.
It is not. Although it is his fault to, you know, call off with 10-7, although that worked out for him.
It sure did.
Stuff like that.
And so did the 10-3 move in.
Yeah, everybody folded.
Buddy.
All right, let's get to the hand.
Okay.
It's 25K, 50K. It's day 5 of the main event. We're in the money. The ICM should be meaningless, basically. Even if the money means a lot to you, like, the money jumps are so small percentage-wise at this point that you should not really be thinking about the money jumps.
Yeah, you're, like, hours away from the money starting to, like, move again in a real way. And even that's, like, from 40K to 80K, which is great, but when you're looking at the actual prizes available here, it's not a meaningful number.
Right. So, Toby Lewis, who is, you know, one of the best players still remaining in the main event at this point, because he's very good multi-table tournament player. As you said, $8.2 million in earnings.
I did say that.
Yeah. Aggressively British. He has $5.9 million, so over 100 bigs. Opens ace-10 of hearts under the gun to 100K, min open.
Fine.
His prime adversary, Daniel Vampan, has $3.13 million on the button. Calls with 8-7 of clubs. We're deep enough for this, right? Got 60 blinds?
Yeah, he's got like 63 blinds even. I think so. I think we should call this hand.
Yeah.
We could win a huge pot, and we can steal pots too because we're on the button. It makes it easier.
Rigby is in the small blind. He's got about $3 million. He's got king eight of spades. He's going to make the call.
I mean, I like it less, but I think a solver may approve it, honestly.
A solver would approve it if Toby was in later position. I'm not sure about when he opens under the gun.
Yeah,
but it's possible that it would approve.
Certainly, if Rigby was in the big blind, it's an auto call.
Oh, of course.
So it can't be that bad.
The true garbage human of the hand is Brown in the big blind. He's got the most chips, though, $6.9 million. He calls with 2-4s.
Okay.
2 red 4s.
Toby Lewis is like, we may not win this pot. That's
yeah,
okay.
You have ace-10 of hearts, though. You're like, I know what type of flops I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Like, ace-3-4 is okay, but not amazing. Whereas, you know, like, 6-7-9 with 2 hearts, I'm pretty happy.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, ace-high boards in general, though, favor us, and it's hard. We often have a strong, you know, our range is pretty strong on ace and king high boards.
Yeah. 10-7-7 is a little bit of a rough board, like boards like that.
Yeah.
You know,
we're probably doing a lot of we're trying to keep the pot small with most of these boards.
Right. Ace 10 suited is just a beautiful hand to see a flop with, though. It's fine.
Sure.
450K in the pot. Okay. The flop does have 2 hearts on it.
Hello.
5-6-queen with the 6 and queen of hearts. So Vampan has flopped open ended. The blinds have flopped nothing. And nut flush draw for Toby Lewis.
Okay.
Rigby checks.
Yeah.
Brown checks.
Of course.
All right, you're Toby Lewis, 450 in the pot. You have ace-10 of hearts, 5-6-queen, 3 opponents. Go.
Bet.
How much?
260,000.
250 is way better. Lewis checks.
Okay, it's not horrible. That's a board he's going to check a lot, right?
Yeah.
So this is one of the hands that actually we don't mind building a pot with, right? But it's okay to have this sometimes in the bucket, the check bucket too.
And we're probably not check raising, right?
I don't think so. I mean, depending on the size of the stack of the person who bets, but right.
Because, you know, sets are really out there. The fives and sixes are in all of these guys' ranges.
Sure. Yeah. Two pair
sets.
And we can end up beating those things too, but we don't need to bloat this pot.
Yeah. No. It's an interesting play to check. I mean, it makes it hard to put you on the nut flush draw.
It does. It also sets us up, though, where if we check call the flop, we can get blown off this hand on the river, or sorry, on the turn a lot, especially the way people size up now, right?
This is true.
But if we're trying to be balanced and try and confuse people, sometimes we have to check this hand and check call it, right? The way we would do with like two tens and make it look like, you know, that's the kind of hand we have.
Yeah. The good news is there's only one player behind us, so it's mm-hmm. less likely that we're going to get bet into and then blown off it on the turn by that one player.
Correct.
So Lewis checks, and now it's on Vampan, who has an open ender and no showdown value.
Right.
But we are four-handed. So is this worth a semi-bluff with no backdoor flush draw?
My inclination is to check this, actually.
Yeah,
it's deceptive. I'd be worried that guys like Rigby aren't going anywhere anyway. A lot of the time, if Rigby has any reason to stick around, he's sticking around, right?
Yeah.
He also may make a move just because he makes moves sometimes that has nothing to do with the board. I would hate to lose the equity that I've got here when I can get a free card. So mostly my inclination is to check here and maybe bet turns if it checked to me again and if the turn looks like a reasonable turn to bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, I like that thought process. Although cool. I don't think betting would be a disaster.
Can't be that bad.
Yeah. Got eight high, and we've got equity against everything if we get called. Getting raised is a bit of a bad situation.
Depending on, you know, we'll have to figure it out if we get raised. But also building a pot isn't that bad. If we get called, we can make the nuts. Like, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So.
So Vampan checks.
Cool.
He agrees with you.
Nice, Vampan.
Nitro Betting agrees with you, dear listener. About everything. All of your political views. Whatever they are.
What about religious views?
All of them.
What if I have conflicting religious views?
Nitro Betting agrees with both of them. Also.
Oh, can only be two?
All seven of them.
Better.
Yeah. Nitro Betting agrees with who you think is the best actor in the world, with who you think is the best basketball player.
It's the same person for
obviously,
both.
Obviously, it's LeBron James.
Tom Hanks.
Nitro Betting agrees with you. And you will agree with the amazing promotions that you can get when you use the link in the description to sign up for Nitro Betting. You'll be like, I agree that this is a good thing for me.
It says, I agree with the amazing promotions. So it's like the amazing promotions are making some sort of assertion and I'm agreeing with that assertion.
Yeah, the assertion is, this is adding value to your financial life. And you're like, you know what, Nitro Betting? I agree.
It's true.
Yeah.
You are correct, Nitro Betting.
Yeah, and those promotions often come in the form of sports betting promotions.
Yes, they do.
They come every once in a while down the pipe just to the people who use the link in the description. You also get access to the Poker Guys monthly tournament. What a joy that is for you. There's casino games. There's sports betting. Lots and lots of sports betting.
So much sports betting.
There's poker on Nitro Betting. You got to get in there and get agreed with.
That's the new...
You got something, you got one of those things that's, you know, on the subreddit, the unpopular opinion subreddit where everybody's just posting things that everybody actually agrees with. But if you had something that you actually wouldn't post in that subreddit because you're like, this is actually a really unpopular opinion. Like, I can't even, Grant can't even say it on the podcast.
Give us an example right now, Grant.
No, I can't do that. But Nitro Betting agrees with you secretly. Like in a wink, wink way.
Wow.
It could be anything.
It could get dark. It's the anything that would be hated on the unpopular opinions subreddit.
Or anything else.
So maybe it's a popular opinion.
It's a universal agreement principle.
Like, I love pizza.
Yeah.
Nitro's like, we got you.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Love pizza. All right. Back to poker.
We danced around that a little bit.
That's how we do it.
You almost got yourself in real trouble.
No, I didn't. All right. So the pot has 450K in it, and we're still four-handed going to the turn. Right. The flop is five of spades, six of hearts, queen of hearts. The turn is the 10 of clubs.
Cool.
And that is significant for Toby Lewis because he turns second pair top kicker to go with his nut flush draw. This doesn't help Rigby. This doesn't help Jones or Brown. Brown and Jones are basically the same name. So I would say this is overall a bad card for Vampan against the field of players because now there's just a bunch of other straight draws. A nine is now not necessarily going to win him the pot. Like King Jack is a possibility.
Oh, interesting. Also, just like
Jack 8 is a possibility.
If someone has a 10, they might really bet it because, you know, it's raised to be the best hand a lot of the time.
Yep. Right?
And so, or like if we bet, because they check, they're calling a 10, right? They're not going to fold a 10 right. for one bet now, and like that's not what we want either.
All right, so let's give the people the Rigby that they want,
okay.
who has nothing. He has king, eight of spades on the 5-6, 10-queen, no one spade on the board.
Yeah.
And he's going to just bet into three players, 325. This is going to work sometimes.
I mean, it looks kind of strong, right?
It looks like he has a queen, you know, or maybe even right. two pair or a set. You know,
he could have queen 10,
yeah.
I guess. And, you know, both Toby Lewis and Vampan have shown that they're not that interested in this pot, it seems. Now, it turns out they are interested in this pot, but they're not deeply interested in the pot. They're not trying to build a pot.
Well, Lewis has the type of hand that you would expect he would feel that way, though.
Well, yeah, that is true. But, like, a lot of the time when both those players check, when the under-the-gun guy checks and then the button checks, too, they often don't have a hand they're going to call with
yeah.
if we bet. And so we really just, in our mind, as Rigby, we might just have to get through the small blind. Who could have anything still? Who could have it all?
The right? big blind, you mean?
Sorry, the big blind.
Yeah.
But often they're not, right? Often they're just going to have two cards that are barely good enough to call the raise because they're closing the action.
Right.
And then they've got two players behind them, so it's not an easy spot for them either. This is going to work some percentage of the time. It'd be nice to have anything going on with anything. So if we get called, we have some prayer.
Or maybe, yeah, that would be nice. Or to have maybe one fewer player in the hand. There are just so many people to
that
get through.
That would be nice, too.
You know, and the 10 does connect with a lot of hands that
yeah.
either hit a 10 or have a straight draw now. So
agreed.
It's not going to get through that often.
I mean, Toby Lewis, what? If I was guessing, I'd put him on ace queen.
Or he could have king jack.
Sure he could.
Yeah.
Sure.
Why not? Give him the king jack.
Yeah.
And when you said ace queen, I think you meant ace jack or ace king. Did you say
ace queen? Because there's a queen on the board.
Yeah.
I certainly did not mean ace queen.
Yeah. You meant ace jack or ace king.
Yeah, ace king seems like the most obvious thing. He opened under the gun, right? Let's give him ace king.
Let's give him ace king.
Is he folding? Well, when we bet 350 into what, 450?
He only bet 325.
Into 450?
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing.
He's probably
calling. It's not that many blinds, right?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. He has ace 10 of hearts. He's never folding.
Right, of course he isn't.
So Brown folds. All right, Toby Lewis now has showdown value. Seems like a call is in order.
Super obvious call, right? Not only do we have showdown value and a huge draw, but also Rigby's the kind of guy who absolutely will bet a lot of rivers when we improve and when we don't and when he improves and when he doesn't. And we get to sometimes make the nuts and have him bet big into us as a bluff. Incredible. Sometimes we can hero him, you know, on a bunch of rivers too. And that could be incredible as well. I think it's a clear call.
Yeah, and also sometimes it'll be a brick river, and we can even go for value. Like, sometimes we can get value from Rigby on the river with ace-10 on this board if it's a brick river.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Lewis calls. All right. If I'm Vampan with 7-8 of clubs, I'm tossing it here because there's too many reverse implied odds situations here. I mean, either player could have king-jack.
Right.
Rigby could have jack-8. You know, we only have one card to come. We don't have a flush draw. We just have a straight draw. And it's not that good of a straight draw anymore. If it was a deuce, it's still a really good straight draw, but it's a 10.
Right.
So it diminishes the value of our straight draw.
Yeah, that's all fair. I think the clear thing we should say is calling seems like a big mistake.
Yes.
So you could try and win the pot now / eliminate some of these straight draws with the raise, or you could just throw your hand away. Mostly you just pick to throw your hand away, of course.
But mostly. Like,
but to me, a raise isn't completely out of line either necessarily in this spot, right? Because Lewis doesn't rate to have a very strong hand, even though he has a pretty strong hand. Most of the time, it's more like ace-jack suited, ace-king, maybe a 10, maybe two jacks.
Or two nines.
Two nines, right. Hands that will probably, a lot of those hands, maybe all of them, will fold to a raise here.
Yep, I agree. That's the reason to raise is because Rigby could have anything.
Right.
And then, of course, Rigby can have it too, which is
sure.
sucks. But then Lewis, yeah, he has a lot of hands that don't love it. But at the same point, he's a very strong thinking player.
Mm-hmm.
And if we raise now, it makes no sense.
What could we have that we would be raising right now?
10-10.
Somehow we have 10-10, yeah.
That's it.
That is it. We could really have 10-10, though. 10-10 actually does make sense all the way through.
Maybe
right?
we have a sneaky queen 10 suited.
Right. Maybe we could have that. There ain't much there, though. You are correct.
Because I don't see 5-6, 5-5, 6-6, any of those hands checking the flop on two hearts with all
three
these draws.
Players, yeah.
Doesn't seem likely.
I agree. That seems impossible.
Yeah. So I think it's probably a bad idea against specifically Toby Lewis.
The only reason why those hands might check is because Rigby is in the hand, and maybe you want to give him a chance to lose his mind.
But there's two other players in the hand.
And it's sort of a wet
board. And Rigby can lose his mind even if we bet. That's why we didn't want to bet 7-8 of clubs. That was part of it.
That is correct. No, you're right. I mean, I agree with you. I think it's very hard for anyone to have a set, or for him to have a set here. Because
with the guy who clearly has some sort of showdown value or strong draw being Toby Lewis, I do not love continuing in the hand because of any player at this table, he's going to be willing to trust his reads and figure it out. And like a lot of players in the main event are going to call Rigby with jacks here and then fold to the raise, right? Because they're like, ah, shit, the guy raised. I don't want to deal with this with jacks. But Toby Lewis is going to be like, how can this guy have anything?
Right.
You know, I'm Toby fucking Lewis.
It's got to be 10-10. That's it. Does he really have 10-10? I guess he could, but he's probably going to 3-bet that at least some of the time, right? Because Rigby's calling everything, by the way. And so, even a small 3-bet is a much cleaner play for 10s, and you get to use position to, like, keep the pot small later on anyway, even though you're bloating it pre-flop. You essentially, you know, give back that street at one point.
It's actually not a bad play with 10s in this specific setup pre-flop, because then you can fold to a 4-bet that Lewis makes when he opens under the gun and you 3-bet anyway.
Yeah, the only thing you're folding to that's a problem is ace-king there.
Yeah.
And even then, it's just a flip.
Yeah, it's fine.
And you get to isolate. You get a lot of good things happening. So we have to believe some of the time he's going to 3-bet 10s, you know, at least players will. We don't know if Vampan will, right?
Right.
But certainly calling is not not insane either, where you call to try and hit your set and get all the money from either the under the gun opener or fucking Rigby who's here. You know, that's another way to do it, which is reasonable too.
It
is cheaper.
It is. So I guess you could have that. But so my ultimate conclusion here is that in this setup, in the main event, raising with 8-high when it feels like Rigby is Rigby and the guy under the gun has some sort of marginal showdown value, I like that overall.
Me too.
I don't like it when the guy under the gun is a really good pro.
Who's going to, and your story is three combos, essentially, and that's it.
Yeah, and the really good pro is going to trust his gut, trust his read, and not just fold because it's the main event.
Right.
He doesn't care about that, you know?
He cares less anyway.
Yeah. Right. So I think Vampan's going to end up raising, and I understand the sentiment behind that, but I think it's the wrong target when the guy who clearly has something is Toby Lewis.
Right, he clearly does.
Yeah.
But I get where Vampan's coming from with the whole, he just can't be that strong, so he's probably just going to throw it away instead of like going that extra level like you're talking about, which is like, if I really look at all the angles, Lewis will do, he's just not going to be able to find a fold with anything reasonable here.
Yeah. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I guess I do. The thing is this, though. We have to ask ourselves, if we raise enough, will that work? And also, can we threaten his stack in certain ways? And what is the setup for rivers?
We cannot threaten his stack.
Because he's got us covered.
Yeah.
So we cannot. Oh, that's problematic, too. In fact, even if we were to double through him, he still has like 30 blinds.
Yeah.
Or sorry, 60 blinds. So, I mean, obviously he likes having 120 blinds more, but 60 blinds doesn't suck either.
Right.
Okay. So then, yeah, I think that's a great point. I think you're right. Toby Lewis is going to be a tough guy to get this through on, and he's got something. So we kind of have to get there now.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Who wants to get there? And by the way, Rigby could have it. We could do all this, and Rigby could move
in. Of course. Rigby is most likely of anybody at the table to have air, which he does, but he can also absolutely have it.
Yeah. So that's just yet another reason not to do this. Okay. I agree.
Yeah. Although I understand in theory why this would be a tempting spot to race.
I can see it, and I can see in the moment not having time to think of all these things we just said and being like, this is a good spot to raise and raising. I can see myself doing that, for
but
sure.
You probably wouldn't raise to 750 over 325, which is what Vampan does.
Yeah, I'd probably go a little bigger.
I feel like Lewis is like barely ever going to fold for this.
Yeah. Like even just to see what happens on the river with some of those hands.
Yeah. Well, like we need Lewis to fold right now. We don't want to have to get there.
Yeah, so we should make it a million.
Or 1.2 even, something like that. You know, like,
I mean, 1.2 is going to be really hard for him with most of his range.
Yeah.
Unless he's really... but if he comes back to the way you're describing it, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe he's like, I don't say he can have
it. It's got to be more likely to work than 750.
Of course it does.
Like, Jax is not going to fold for 750. The story is still bad, right?
Yeah.
And for 1.2, he might have Jax and be like, God, this story sucks, but it's just not worth it, you know? Mm. But like for 750, you can see if he shuts down on the river. You know,
right,
it's barely anymore. The price you're getting is insane.
That's true. And as we've been saying, Lewis starts the hand with a lot of chips. So he can really, I understand that the chips, actually, the more chips you have, the less they're worth. So in some ways, you can make a few more speculative calls like this as you have more chips.
Yep. Anyway, I'm not a huge fan of the sizing.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, or do you?
I think you're right. I think it's weird just to size it this small. If it was just Rigby and everyone else folded, I think you could size this small. You could even just click it back to 650.
I agree, because Rigby could just have nothing. Yeah,
he can just fold, or he can have like barely anything and just be like, whatever.
Yeah, he could have like five deuce or whatever Rigby has. Yeah. So anyway, Rigby folds, of course, because he has nothing. All right, it's Toby Lewis. You have ace 10 of hearts, so you do have the nut flush draw. You have showdown value. I think the showdown value means you have to call rather than raising, right?
Raising makes no sense to me.
What if you didn't have the showdown value? What if you turned the deuce of nothing? Would you think of three betting here?
The thing is this. The ace high plays this pretty good showdown value against this, against the way we're talking about thinking this through, right?
Yeah.
Where it still is basically a set of tens or some draw, and it's some weird draw thing, right?
Yeah.
So the ace high plays pretty good against that. Like, it's beating all the straight draws.
Yeah, the problem is against this specific straight draw, you know, the ace high can get beat by a 7 or 8 on the river.
Yes. No, the thing is, there's a lot of rivers where we're not going to know where we're at, even when the straights clunk out.
Yeah.
Right? But still, the fact that we've got that showdown value makes me more interested in calling. If we had a worse hand, I'd be more interested in calling.
Right? Calling feels like the clear play.
Yeah.
And that's what Lewis does. He calls.
But I mean, even with the ace high as showdown value,
oh, I see.
I think I could talk myself into a call.
I see. Yeah, I could see it.
I mean,
I could see it either way.
That's where we need. That's where we check, and we really like. Please check back with you. Just give up. Just give up. And you're like, oh baby, he gave up. And you try.
I mean, even with this hand, we were like, please give up. Please give up. If the deuce of spades hits the river, we really hope he checks back.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we can call a big barrel.
The thing is, though, as Toby Lewis, we block pocket tens. So now there's only one combo. It's much better to have the ten than not.
Yeah.
Like it's. You know, 3x more combos.
Good math.
Thanks.
2.275 million in the pot.
Yeah.
Vanpin has 2.285 million.
Yes.
Do you think that has to do with how he sized it on the turn?
Yes. I think that really might be what happened.
And that's like expecting one call type of thing, because then you end up with.
Oh, yeah. Like, why would he think that? He's raising thinking it's going to be over right away, right? So, no, this is just. He's just trying to size small for the turn in case he gets re-raised. And so he doesn't put too much in because he doesn't know what he's going to do on the river.
Right. I think that's what's going on.
Yeah, me too.
The river is the five of hearts, which pairs the board, but is also a heart. So Toby Lewis makes the nut flush.
Kind of a great card for Toby Lewis, not just because it makes him the nut flush, but it also kills. If somehow, some way, our opponent can have sets here that aren't pocket tens, which we block heavily, well, pocket fives just got blocked heavily too.
Yep.
We just lost two more combos of value if they can even be there anyway.
All right,
there's almost nothing there.
I think the things we have to ask ourselves as Lewis are, if we check, is Vanpin going to move in with weaker value hands than what we have? Because we could just lead if we wanted to.
Right.
And what are the problems? Like, how do we ever lose in this hand? That's the thing we could ask ourselves.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to ask yourself before acting?
Yeah, I'd want to ask myself, if we check, what's Vanpin going to do with his misses?
Right.
Like his straight draws that miss. Is he going to bluff them? Because if he's going to bluff them, I'm way more interested in checking. If he's never bluffing, I'm more interested in betting.
Right? Yeah. Yep. So what's your preference as far as actions? Do you want to lead because you're afraid of checkbacks from like queen 10 type hands?
I don't know if we get value from queen 10 anyway. Ace is beating them. King is beating them. All flushes are beating it.
Yeah.
I don't think we're getting value.
Yeah.
So I don't think leading is going to work the way we need it to. Also, if we've got him in a real bad shape, like he has a flush also, I don't think he's checking back. Like, I think any flush is probably going to bet the river here is my belief. Maybe I'm wrong. We can talk about it. But my initial thought would be like, if he rivered the hearts, of course he's going to bet.
Yep. So Lewis checks.
Good.
All right. You are David Vanpin.
Yeah.
You have 184K in Hendon. You are on the main event feature table against a known elite pro. You have a pot size bet left and 8 high. You're the aggressor. What you doing?
Let me tell you why I think a move in is called for here.
Okay.
It's because it's hard to give Toby Lewis that many nut flush draws.
For sure, that is correct.
That's the reason to do it, right?
He could have King Jack. For the sizing we used on the turn, he could absolutely have King Jack.
I mean, can you imagine if he wins with King High after all this? What a disaster. He could have that. He could have decided to slow play a queen because it's four ways, have like King Queen, and then just call and then call because it's so small, and now be like, God damn it, the hearts came in. You know? Like, now, we checked back also on the flop, admittedly. But I think we likely have more heart combos than he does. Is that reasonable to say?
I don't think so.
No? You think it's the same?
Yeah.
So we probably have more like suited connector type heart combos, right?
Like maybe, yeah, maybe, but we checked the flop.
Yeah, that's the thing. We still checked the flop. We checked the flop with the open ender also.
Yeah.
So, you know, we decided not to bet our big draw. We decided not to bet the other big draw. I don't know if we have more. Maybe that's fair. But the point is, it feels really hard for Lewis to have the hearts.
It feels
really, really, really hard, even though he does. That is enough of a reason in the main event with a pot-sized bet left, and it would really hurt him to call and be wrong, right? It's going to cost him 45 blinds to call and be wrong.
Yeah, going beyond what you said, it's not just that he doesn't have the hearts, but it looks like he has really marginal showdown.
Right. If he has jack, is he really going to call? I mean, is he good enough to call just because he has the jack of hearts in his hand?
If he has ace-10 that's not ace-10 of hearts, right? Which is definitely a hand he could have here.
Totally.
Yeah.
It feels like we just have to move in because of all that.
Well, I want to ask...
We're mostly getting...
I want to ask the sizing question.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Do we need to go all the way?
Is moving in really better? Because I think you could look at it a couple different ways, right? Like, when it looks like Lewis has marginal hands, would we really move in for value? That's question one.
That's a great question. So you want to bet like 1 million on the river?
Yeah, 1.2 maybe.
Because you feel ace-10 probably isn't going to call anyway when the heart comes, right?
Yeah.
They're just like, why would I call that?
Right.
That's a great point. And the really strong hands, like he has. Like, we have to assume as Vampan that if Lewis somehow rivered the fucking flush, he ain't folding no matter how much we bet.
Right.
We have to believe that. And so with that in mind, why would we bet 2.3 million or whatever? Shouldn't we bet 1 million so that we get the...
Or maybe
a little extra,
maybe like 1.4, but like
fine.
The next layer to it, though, is that it's possible that Toby Lewis has played enough with amateurs in tournaments like this, where he's like, if he's not moving in, it means he's just trying to save some and he's bluffing some of the time,
right? Like he would never risk his whole tournament life on a bluff in this spot when I've already called, and so you get to sell the bluff a little bit better. That is the one thing I've been thinking about that the whole time when you started asking this question. Actually, as like that's the only really good reason. I don't think it neutralizes the other reasons, though. I think the other reasons are better to bet small. I like those reasons better. So I want to bet small-ish, 1.1, 1, 1.2, whatever, to fold out all those marginal hands when the fucking heart comes, and it just feels like, how can I call?
I think moving in is much better when Lewis is the effective stack.
Oh, yeah.
Because threatening their tournament life is a much bigger deal.
Yeah.
But you're never doing that against Lewis in this hand, so... Yeah, I think smaller sizing is probably overall better, unless you have this idea that Lewis's perception of you is like, if you move in, you really have it.
That's the time. I mean, actually, I don't know if I agree if it's better to move in when Lewis is a smaller stack, because Lewis is the guy who might be willing to make the call off. He's like, oh, you're moving me in to try and threaten my life. I see that.
Yeah,
you're
maybe.
Less likely to have it because of that. Like, you're using that power against me, as opposed to the other, this way it is currently, where Vampam moves in. He's only throwing himself at the bus. And Lewis is like, who does that? Not that many people this deep in the main.
Right.
So maybe it's better the other way.
Interesting metagame stuff.
Yeah.
So I think if it were like super pro against super pro in a high roller, it's clearly not a move-in.
But
with the metagame stuff, I think a move-in might be better. It's possible. It might be like more effective enough to make it worth it. You know? Whereas in most cases, I think it's not more effective enough to make it worth it.
Fair enough. I think that's fair.
So like interesting. That's what Vampan does. He moves in.
Yes. Okay.
And I get it. Like, it really looks like Lewis has marginal value, and we just hope he doesn't super pro us and call us with jacks, you know?
Right. And, you know, it would be really weird to call us with jacks because jacks block king jack.
Yeah.
So, like, that's one of the worst hands to call.
Well.
Unless we have the jack of hearts in our hand, then it gets
weird. I guess I'd be a little bit more worried about ace 10 because.
Right. Ace 10, no heart.
Yeah.
Ace 10 of clubs or something.
Yeah. Any ace-10, really, because it blocks full houses. It blocks the most obvious full house.
Oh, actually, ace-10 with a heart is even better. But he's not going to have ace-10 off anyway.
No, he's not.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
But he has ace-10 of hearts.
I mean, whatever.
So Lewis has the ultimate calling hand. The ultimate calling hand that's not really ahead of that much value, if ever ahead of value. Maybe he could be ahead of some hearts, but those usually bet the flop.
They usually do, but every time... But if Vampam ever gets to the river with hearts, I think he is betting here. Is he moving in? Probably, right? Probably?
Well, let me...
I don't know.
...give you a little bit of my memory of what Toby Lewis says in the tank, because I watched this hand as it unfolded on the stream.
Great.
He said, I might look like a right idiot after this one, in a very British way. He also said, you really check back a set on the flop? You check back a set on the flop? Are you sure you check back a set?
Yeah.
He said, you know I have the flush, right? He said that, and the dealer gave him a warning. he...
How would Vampim ever know that he has a flush?
Yeah, I know. He was just trying to get a read.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. And then he started saying to himself, like, King Jack of Hearts. He could have King Jack of Hearts and be doing it. I guess he could have King Jack of Hearts. That's what I can beat. That's all I can beat. King Jack of Hearts.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he thinks this guy is never shoving a worse flush here. And the thing is, like, to whatever degree our opponent has a flush, has got to be a similar percentage of the checkbacks that he would check back a fucking set with, right?
Well, the hand that makes the most sense is, of course, 10-10.
Yes, but we block that. There's one combo.
Yes, but let's look at it without knowing Toby's hand,
right? Okay,
for a second. That's the only hand that makes full sense the whole way through. Like, 100%. We argued for a 3-bet preflop, but that was like, you know, you don't have to 3-bet. You can absolutely flat.
Yes.
It makes total sense to check back the flop.
Yes.
You could bet the flop, but it's totally fine to check back the flop. And then the turn comes and you bingo and you raise. Cool. You have a full house. You go for all the value.
Yeah, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
Like, so we have the best possible hand ever to call with,
yes.
Basically, right? We actually have not just the flush, but the nut flush.
Just in case he's doing some weird thing with, like, trip fives. Like, we beat that.
I mean, it's amazing. We also beat other flushes that, like, you know, it isn't like, oh, I blocked the full house, but what if he has King X of Hearts or other flushes?
Yeah.
But we have the best flush, so we don't have to worry about that either. And we block 10-10. So it's like, this is the dream hand to have in this spot if we have to pick a hand. Like, this.
I mean, we could have queen-queen.
No, of course. We could have better hands.
Yeah.
But I mean, from the point of view of, quote, bluff catching.
Yeah.
Which is not exactly what we're doing here, because I think there's some value we beat too.
Yeah.
But the way Toby's clearly thinking about it is as a bluff catcher.
Yes.
This is the boss bluff catching hand.
It is. It's the best possible bluff catching hand.
Yeah, because Vampim never has like queen queen here, right? We assume he just never is. He's never just gonna flat queen queen.
No, never has queen queen. Didn't bet the flop, so 5-5 and 6-6, which by the way there are four total combos of, are extremely unlikely. And then there's one remaining combo of 10-10.
Right. So we're losing to five combos total, really.
Yeah.
That are reasonable, and even those, only 10-10 is really reasonable, and there's just one combo of that.
Yeah.
And he might 3-bet that sometimes pre-flop. Right. As opposed to the thing that Toby's doing, it sounds like, is he's putting him on one heart combination, exactly, which is King Jack of Hearts. And if you do that,
it's 1-1. You're getting 2-1, but it's the main event.
And you have to be open to maybe once in a while he does have 6-6.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, I don't know for sure that he didn't check back 6-6. He might have checked back. It's at least possible. So if you give him even one combo of 6-6, now we're breaking even on that call.
Like,
we're indifferent to the call.
I wonder if Rigby's mere presence in the hand affects Lewis's thought process, because he's like, this guy is more likely to check a set back on the flop because Rigby's in the hand, because he's just trying to catch Rigby.
And also could, in same way, like, he may be less apt to 3-bet 10 sometimes to give Rigby a chance to put in a weird 3-bet and, you know, go to town on him then or something like that. Yeah. Having said that, we have to actually believe four ways he's not betting Queen 5, 6, 2 hearts on the flop when check 2 in on the button, which feels like he's mostly... I mean, who doesn't bet that in that spot?
Yeah, I know. I know, but...
But it's possible, of course.
All of the pure theory stuff says this is absolute ultimate... Slam dunk call. But I think the main eventness of it all and the amateur status of Vampan really snuck into Toby Lewis's head.
I think so, too. I think actually, if Toby Lewis's life was in danger, it's an easier call for him than if Vampam's life was in danger.
So maybe this goes back to Vampam making the right move to go all in.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I think if he bets $1.2 million, he's getting called.
Yeah.
Like, how can he not with this hand, right? Like,
So Lewis folds.
Yeah.
After tanking forever.
Man.
I totally get it. I've been in spots where I really, really trust my read and my gut, and I'm like, everything tells me I'm supposed to call that I have knowledge on. But this guy is just always has me. Always has me. And I'm sure I've been wrong in some of those spots. I don't get to see it because it's not streamed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, this is... If you go on Twitter, there's just like 10 different clips of someone like filming Toby Lewis slowly starting to fold in poker rooms or at tournaments, stuff like that, because the main event was up everywhere. And the room just groaning loudly. Like, no! Oh! You know? Yeah.
And once Toby Lewis says, you know, I have a flush, right? Vampan's like, oh, I'm dead, right?
Yeah.
And like, he can't believe he got it through. I'm sure he can't believe he got it through.
How could you ever imagine, especially the nut flush, but
with a 10.
I mean,
you got the nut flush with a 10.
I mean, you're basically like, so every bluff works against you, essentially. Like, what can you have that you call with?
Queen-queen.
Obviously, queen-queen.
Yeah. Yes.
But queen-queen, guess who's betting queen-queen on the flop? Toby Lewis.
I don't know. He didn't bet ace ten of hearts on the flop.
Right, but four ways with that what a board with Rigby in, he's betting queen-queen.
There's a possibility.
Queen-queen doesn't have to worry about action on the flop, though, where ace ten of hearts could get itself into a massive pot where it's just drawing to hearts only. It is different. Queen-queen is way more equity than
ace ten
of hearts.
It is, but I don't think we can categorically dismiss it.
Of course not, but I'm saying if you want to go dimensional, like almost all the queen queens are betting.
Yeah.
Most of the ace ten of hearts are betting too, but I think queen queen just has to bet almost 100% of the time here.
You would have said that about ace ten of hearts before you saw this hand.
I would have said that I expect ace ten of hearts to bet.
Yeah.
Hearts to bet almost always. And that's why I thought it was a good move in by Vampam ultimately. Can you put him on that hand?
And that's also part of what is kind of like leaning towards a call is that Lewis is well under repped.
Yes. He looks like he has jack-jack, ace-10, stuff like that,
yeah.
But nine of hearts. That's a really good reason to call.
Yeah.
Really good reason.
Being under-repped is not always a reason to call. I think people overuse that reason as a reason to call because they've heard about it and they do it on purpose. But this is a spot where it actually is a reason to call.
Yeah. And also that raise was so small. If the raise was bigger, you're not as under-repped, right? The raise is to 1.2 million. Maybe we find a call with all those marginal hands, but like we were saying, maybe he just chooses like not to do it.
Right.
This is a hand he would have called with anyway. And now you get the move in and it's like, he knows I'm strong.
Yeah.
Or he's more of an inkling that I'm strong. But I don't have to be super strong here.
What a fantastic hand.
Wow.
I really can't fault Lewis that much for the fold. I know everybody's saying it's a terrible fold. And I understand from a theory perspective why that's true. But if you make a lot of assumptions about Vampam that can apply to a lot of the people who are, you know, not super pros who are playing the main event, I get the thought process.
I'm really curious if this fold actually makes money or not for Lewis.
Can't know. Can't ever know. Because it's not something you can plug into a solver.
Of course not. Just that, like, it's so hard for Vampam to have the full houses except for the one combo of tens that it just really... It seems like it's hard for this one to make money for him on the fold. And I really come back to what we're saying. I do think it's because Vampam moves in and he's just like, he's got to have it, right? He has to have it.
And then they went on break. So that was probably a fun time for Toby Lewis.
Well, it's probably better than having to keep playing.
Yeah, I guess the break is good. But, like you're having an angry break. You're having a not good break.
Yeah, you're like...
Also, Vampam like jumped up and said, I'm a fucking monster.
Toby Lewis would have had like 11 million, and instead he's now down to like 5 million. I mean, it's like really different.
But he still has plenty of chips, but it hurts. Yes. It hurts a lot.
It hurts. I mean, he's probably like, I would have been one of the chip leaders in the tournament, right?
Yeah.
Like, I might win this thing if I make that call, and most people in the world make that call, and I'm so good that I didn't make that call.
That might be a life-altering fold.
Right, exactly. And of course, he'll never know that, but that's the problem.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be great if he could find out, at least, because then some of the time it wouldn't bother him.
Do we know if Toby Lewis is still in at the time of this recording?
I think he is, but I don't know.
If he's not in, who knows?
Exactly. Yes.
There's only 49 players remaining at this
maybe
time.
Maybe not. Well, let's not.
All right, we won't.
Either he is or he isn't, whatever.
All right. Anyway, that's just a fabulous hand. Very fun to talk about.
Indeed.
I enjoyed it.
Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. 90s baby scratching them vinyls until the record breaks. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates. I'm the rapper most likely to make.